this episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Today, we are so privileged to have Jack Brickhouse in the Art Lab today, and he's going to share with us all kinds of nuggets of wisdom about the psychology of self-development, how to be an entrepreneur of your own life. Coming up next.
Welcome to Therapy Bites Art Lab, where Dr. Heath and his special guests share real-life stories of helping and healing. Fresh from the actual therapy couch, while taking a bite out of common counseling missteps and misconceptions. And now, here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
Jack, thank you so much for being here. We've been excited to have you in the Art Lab for some time. And for your new listeners, that stands for Accurate Realistic Thinking, Life Affirming Beliefs. And it really is our very own lab experiment that we encourage all you listeners and viewers to take part in. And you can use some of these concepts to biggie-size your life. And Jack's here to help us do just that. He is a world-class entrepreneur. He's been all over the world doing different things and helping other people be successful in their life. And he's going to share some of those things with us today. Jack, tell us a little bit about what you do and how you do it.
Absolutely. First and foremost, I appreciate you all having me into the studio, into the lab today to have some conversation. So I am Jack Brickhouse. I am currently based out of Phoenix, Arizona, by way of the Midwest, Gary, Indiana, which is just outside of Chicago, Illinois. Over the past 10 to 15 years, I've really found my passion of community work. I'm working with others, helping others develop the mental mindset to succeed in whatever capacity that looks like for the individual. I've been able to do a lot of work here domestically in the mental health and awareness space. Currently, I'm working with some international partnerships to carry out some of that same mental health work internationally. I'm also an author, music composer, public speaker. I mean, I have a lot of titles. You guys hopefully can learn some more about me as we go through this interview.
Absolutely. That's just fantastic. And you know, I'd like to hear more about what is your work in the area of mental health consist of?
Absolutely. So currently, I am working with an organization here in Arizona, Royalty Ministries Community Foundation. That organization is a 501c3 counseling firm. I actually have been friends with the pastor and working with the pastor for about the past 6-7 years. Him and his first lady decided they wanted to go ahead and become a nonprofit about a year and a half ago. So they asked me if I would come on. And well, the pastor's his exact words were, "Hey, I'm great at this preaching thing, but I know nothing about business. Will you help me?" And I said, absolutely. You know, that's what I do. And so we've partnered up and I've been able to help build out the board and build up the organization and scale it up. And so now we have some international endeavors. But circling back around to the mental health and awareness. So our core focus is to heal, and that stands for helping everyone achieve love. If everyone loves everyone else, things become a lot easier in this world. And so that's our overall focus. To do that, we have a couple different avenues that we take to assist people there as far as the mental health space goes. The first one is some research. It's called ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences. Not sure if you all are familiar with that.
Yes.
Yeah, so for those who are not familiar, that research is still relatively new, you know, within the past 20, 25 years or so. But it basically it will assist the individual who is participating in the course, the class, whatever it may be, in identifying their levels of trauma. And so, you know, a lot of us know, you know, the surface level traumas. If you went to the military or if you had anything, you know, with violence, of course, that's traumatic. But there's also a variety of other traumas that that we experience as youth, whether if you grew up in a situation of neglect or just, you know, your interaction with the parent or step parent. It's all these different things that make us who we are, but they also can impose trauma on our psyche. As we grow from adolescence into adulthood. And so we aim to help adults, you know, recognize the ACEs they may have experienced, which has led to some of the issues that they may encounter, such as substance abuse, promiscuity, or any of these negative things that we experience. And then it also assists that parent if they have children in, you know, trying to prevent that or helping the child to resolve those traumas at a young age and understand and to understand how to progress into adulthood. The second part of that is autism. So our ministry is located in Mesa, Arizona. So Mesa, Arizona is the first certified autistic city in the country. So the government officials there took the time in 2019 to go through a certification course of some sort to make the city easier for youth and adults alike who deal with autism. And so several of our members have moved to Mesa, Arizona specifically for those resources. And so, you know, a lot of people still don't know a lot about autism. And so we put on courses there to help just the general community understand, hey, this is what autism is. This is how it affects the individual. These are some things that we can do to support the individual and the family. And then our last part is that we've taken on probably in about the last 6 months was mental health awareness for our LGBTQ community. And so we've been working to build a bridge there to, you know, just provide spiritual guidance and also mental guidance for those individuals. So we've started a couple different workshops where we've been inviting that community in. We've been getting some great traction there. And again, our brothers and sisters in the LGBTQ community, you know, they experience their own sets of traumas. And so we're working to help them, you know, learn how to work through those processes.
It sounds like you guys are very active at reaching out and connecting with some forgotten groups, some groups yes. that really lack resources and are kind of on the maybe of the periphery of getting the resources that they need. And what kind of results or effects are you seeing from the work that you're doing providing such resources?
Yeah, so the course of everything that I do individually and that we do here at Royalty Ministries is just about education, enlightenment. You have to learn about yourself and accept some of the things that make up your character and those things that you don't like. You know, we just have to bring the awareness to that, and then we show you how to make change. Just so, for instance, about a month and a half ago, we did an autism fundraiser where our pastor participated in the Hot Wings Challenge, and that was sponsored by our local Hooters. And so we were able to raise money for one of our members who was participating in the Autism Speaks. It was an autism, you know, fundraiser walk. And so that member has then become more engaged since we've been able to not only accept her, but accept her son with the autism challenges that he faces. That has encouraged her to step up more in the community. And so she's become one of our leaders in the community with reaching out to other mothers and, you know, working with school systems to bring in more autistic people. Because what we want to do is, whether it's autism, Down syndrome, LGBT, our veterans, whoever it is, when you come to what we're working on for 2023 is we're going to call our HEAL Resource and Research Center. We want individuals in the community, as the doc just touched on, that are underserved, may not have the resources to gain some of this knowledge or gain some of these resources that they need for their loved one to be able to come in and receive these resources at a discounted rate. It's been working out very well, slowly but surely. You know, these people have been, you know, trickling in with these different challenges, and you know, we just kind of approach it. You know, start with the ACEs. The ACEs is what gives them. Is the ACEs, I guess I would say, is the eye opener that allows people to say, oh, you know, I never thought about this stuff, and then from there we can kind of, you know, assist them with moving around and getting them connected to what resources that we have.
Amazing. And I love that. And this next question is really going to launch this episode, because this is going to be where the proverbial rubber meets the road. A little bit of background about what we do is we're out here to challenge common misperceptions, as we call them, myth, M-Y-T-H, myth perceptions about mental health. And as I tell all new clinicians, your job number one, numero uno, is to work yourself out of a job. My dad used to say, as many people have heard, you can teach a person to fish, or you can give a person a fish and feed them for a day, or you can teach them how to fish and feed them for a lifetime. And so in our profession of mental health, we found the mental health industry itself can often breed not independence, but dependence. Mm-hmm. And what we're really after is, strangely enough, to work ourselves out of a job. And that's what today's episode, I mean, one of the aspects that I kind of had in mind is the psychology of successful self-improvement is, how do you guys teach people how to take back their power? I mean, see, my belief is that everybody has something. I mean, mental health is a bit of a continuum, and everybody is on the continuum somewhere, but that doesn't mean that we have no power. People often mistake control. There's things I don't have control of, the sun rising, whether an employer hires me or not, how somebody talks to me or doesn't talk to me. See, there's all kinds of things I don't have control over, but we try to teach people that doesn't mean that you lack power. So my question is, what kind of success, what kind of techniques do you guys use to actually give people back their power so that they see that, well, they can do something. They can really, you know, take charge of their lives and make a difference in their lives.
Absolutely. And that just goes to promote lifelong learning. And that goes back to the importance of education. And so a lot of people that come to us, you know, they come and they have no idea about any of these things. And outside of the, you know, just doing a autism class or doing an ACEs class, throughout the week, we offer support, right? So we have health and wellness classes that we offer for free on Wednesdays. We have, of course, our prayer lines and our Bible studies, and we have a variety of other workshops that we put on to support our people with thinking. Our core at the ministry is, you know, we show you how to do these things in the beginning, but we promote the importance of lifelong learning, because there's always more to learn. The more you learn, you can then unlock yourself, know who you are, take accountability for those things that you need to change. And then we teach you how to, you know, once you come through our program, well, this is how you continue to, you know, when you feel that you have a challenge, this is how you continue to find resources. You know, this is how, if you want to participate and actually be on the research side, or if you want to volunteer, this is how you stay engaged. So what we do is we work to empower our people to get off the couch, not to feel like a victim, and understand that once you educate yourself about, you know, whatever the given challenge or subject it is that is on your plate at that time, it no longer is a hurdle once you have time to analyze it and study it and learn it and understand how it affects you. And then you're able to come up with a strategy for success. And so that's what we teach, is this is how you think through these problems. This is how you go and find information from different valid sources, because we know there's a lot of information on the internet. You can go on YouTube, you can go on TikTok or whatever. But again, you know, learning how to pick out research sources, and then just how to learn, because with the demographic that we serve, you know, after high school, some may have not finished high school, but learning just kind of stops, and that stops growth of the individual. And so we try to help our members and clients break through that.
Fantastic. You know, it strikes me as I look at this iPhone laying beside me that, by the way, if there's a user manual, I don't know of a user manual for an iPhone. I guess it's really kind of created for self-discovery. But my point is, I've spent, I guess, many, many hours looking up YouTube videos on how to do this, that, and the other thing on my iPhone. It is a tool. I want to learn how to use it. And it amazes me that people don't understand that their brains are a tool, but you have to put time and effort into learning how to use that brain, how to use your body. And if you do that, then I think you're going to have success. And I don't want to take up all of Jack's time talking. My brave psychotherapy adventures here, Bookworm Sarah and Gamer Girl Heather with her. What does your shirt say today, Heather?
Today it says, eat, sleep, game, repeat.
Of course. What else is there? Yeah. What more do you need? Eat, sleep, game, and repeat. And then Debbie, you can't really see her whole shirt, but her shirt says Crazy Squirrel Lady. Speaking of being on the couch, you know, maybe we need to give Debbie some couch time. Crazy Squirrel Lady. I've actually never even seen that shirt before. That's a new one for me.
Yeah.
You had a pet squirrel for a while. How long did you have your pet squirrel?
I had her for 7 years. I was a wildlife rehabilitator for a while, and she was not releasable, so I kept her, and I loved her dearly. She kind of was attached to just me for the most part. She kind of liked Sarah. She slapped my husband, but you know, She was my baby.
Well, thank you guys for being here. And you had some questions for Jack. Who wants to jump in?
Oh, I'd love to, actually. Yeah. So, you know, I found it really interesting. I saw that you, you've worked in the Super Bowl and in the White House. And I was just kind of wondering what kind of brought that about? What type of events happened where you worked in both of those places?
Absolutely. So I have a production company, Brick House Productions, that was started probably 15 years ago now. I had, it was two separate clients. So I had one client that worked specifically in legislation. They are an advocate for a specific demographic. They are, and the organization is an international nonprofit. So the way the White House came about is each year in the summertime from, it was actually two sessions. So there was a May session, and then, what was it? August session. And so this organization, again, as I said, they worked in legislation. They were looking for young leaders who were in law school, who were interested in a specific type of law. And so they would fly in all these students from all around the world to come, about 250, 275 students into Washington, D.C. We were there at the Ritz-Carlton right across from Pentagon City. So while we were there for this conference, all of these, you know, Supreme Court judges, senators, some high ranking professors from top universities around the world would come in to speak. So I had this client for about 5 or 6 years. I flew in, I met with my contact one day, flew in from Arizona to D.C., so we went out to dinner. So he says, hey, I know who the special guest speaker is going to be this session. We said we were going to be there for 2 weeks. I said, oh, okay. So who is it going to be? He said, the vice president. I'm thinking the vice president of the organization. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. I love him. I love when he speaks, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, no, the vice president of the United States. I'm like, oh, no, because I know what this comes with, right? For my production company, part of my background is I have a degree in audio engineering. That's, you know, kind of how I compose music. But instead of doing concerts and those sort of things, I primarily have experience in corporate events. So working with Fortune 500 companies, Super Bowl, White House. So in this particular event, the vice president. So anytime you work with anything White House government, I worked with Secretary of State before, and you have to deal with Secret Service. Mm-hmm. So when you, as a production, when the Secret Service comes in, a lot of times a lot of the set is set, is the stage and all that stuff is set already, but they say no. That's not how it's going to run. So you need to take this whole stage and move this up 10 feet or 15 feet because we need Secret Service back here. And then we got to put a fence up here. And so it was just, and this was just for a private closed session. This was not going out to the public. But then the president said something that the vice president had to speak about. So now this turned into a live press conference for this private event that we were supposed to be in. So what happens there is now all the big networks, the CNNs and the Foxes, all of these people are coming. All right. And it changes the whole, the pressure is now through the roof. So the audio that would normally just go to our few hundred, 200, 300 people is going out to the world. All right. So the White House team comes in. I have to work with the White House communications team. They come with 40 pieces of gear and all this other audio equipment. And what I learned from that was anytime anyone is speaking on behalf of the White House, there has to be a live feed of the audio going back to the White House. So that complicates things even more. When the vice president comes in and everything starts, nobody can leave. You can't go to the bathroom. You can't do anything until the president not leaves the room, or the vice president not leaves the room, but leaves the building. So that was kind of some of that experience in a nutshell. It was a high pressure situation, but I'm glad I have it on my resume. Now.
Wow. And I have a question about that, Jack. Yeah. That's a lot of hurdles to go through to accomplish something. What is your mindset? How do you adapt your mindset to overcoming those hurdles to achieve that larger goal?
Absolutely. So I think for me, it was just from my environment, you know, growing up in the Chicagoland area, that was a tough area to grow up in. And so it takes a lot of resilience to make it through that. So I just always compare it to those things. So the challenges I face in business are nothing compared to the life challenges that I experienced to even get to this point. You know, I use that as motivation, as you know, every challenge that I can overcome, I can then share that story with someone from an underprivileged, underserved community, or someone who's just aspiring to do, you know, what I'm doing. And so I look at, I have a lot of faith. You know, I know I'm not in any position that I should not be in. And so, you know, when the pressure turns on, I dig down deep, I focus in. In my book, Cigarettes and Bad Decisions, we have a chapter called Ice Cold. And ice cold is basically another way of saying tunnel vision. And so when the pressure's on, I turn on that tunnel vision. You have to block out some other things. Sometimes it's friends, sometimes it's family, to dial in on what it is that you need to do. And so that's just, you know, a little bit of my thought process of how I attack things.
In other words, you have to really zero in your focus on a goal and find right. meaning and value right. in that goal. And that right. helps, I guess, some of the other things fade into the background.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, you know, going into any situation, I never think that there's a situation that I can't complete or a challenge that I can't overcome. Some challenges may take, you know, more time than others. It's as simple as if I go and I want to climb a thousand foot mountain compared to a 3,000 foot mountain, there's going to be a few different challenges there. I can get over the 1,000 foot mountain, right, in an hour or so, or whatever it may be, as opposed to the other mountain. So it just takes some different, you know, I think for me, flexibility is always key. So I plan, I come into a scenario with the plan, but I'm flexible enough to make the moves I need to make to win the overall battle, not just the little wars that take place, or to win the overall war, not just the little battles that take place.
That's right. In our profession, we call that decatastrophizing, looking at different struggles and speed bumps and hurdles as not a catastrophe, right. but just something. It's just the next thing. You know, what's the next thing to take care of? And we teach a lot about decatastrophizing.
What were some of your biggest hurdles that you in your own life have encountered in your attempts to come up against specific challenges in your own life?
Yeah, it's just been an uphill battle that has finally stabilized a bit. But again, like I said, coming from my environment, I had my kids young at 17 and 20. My daughter and my son, they're grown now. My daughter will actually be 19 in a couple weeks. You know, just navigating an environment where information was not necessarily prevalent. There was not a lot of mentorship and places to go to find out things. And so for me, that turned into more of self-education, even at a young age. So when I wanted to know about things, I would go to the library and read a book. You know, this is even prior to the internet. The internet just makes things that much easier when you need to find information. But for me, again, it was just looking at what the challenge is, figuring out what the strategy is, how to go about it. Is this a challenge that I can defeat on my own? Do I need teammates for this? Do I need support to get through this? And so for me, again, it's just realizing that I'm always looking back. I'm not really ever worried about the future. I know I can accomplish things in the future, but I just look back. You know, if any doubt or whatever comes into play, I look back and say, hey, these are all the things I've overcome already. So if I've overcome all of these things, well, then this next thing is nothing, because I've done this many, many, many times over. And so it really just turns into a confidence, or what I like to say, godfidence in yourself, and knowing that you have the tools that you need to accomplish anything and everything.
Did you just say godfidence?
Godfidence, yes, yes, yeah. Because when I say confidence, I'm not trying to con anybody, right? So I want to radiate godfidence, right? Positivity to everybody.
How do you spell that?
Yeah, so godfidence, godfidence.
Oh, there's just God changing the con. Godfidence.
God, yes, God, right? Godfidence, right? I'm exuberating the God within me.
You're bringing in a spiritual component to success.
That's right. That's right. And that's a huge component to success for me.
How can somebody apply that maybe in a daily rubber meets the road kind of way in their life? How can our listeners go out today and really apply that in their life?
Absolutely. So especially in entrepreneurship, as we talk about these different challenges we face, sometimes it can be overwhelming. And as you know, when you look at things as just, a physical being, things can be tough, and that causes some of the mental anxiety and mental challenges that we have. So for me, you know, it's just always been relying on my spirituality and my faith. A lot of times when I go out to accomplish these things, again, you know, there's a small plan in place, but I know I've told my wife many, many times, hey, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but this is what we're going to do, right? And then I start, you know, doing the work. And this is with anything. This is, you know, whether I'm, you know, at the office, something with the family, whatever it may be. But I understand, and I've learned by just starting and putting the effort, you know, towards whatever it is I'm trying to do, other resources and other opportunities and support people, support systems, and all these things come to me. But in the beginning, you can't see any of these things most of the time, right? I just say, hey, For instance, when I decided that I wanted to bring the international partnerships to the ministry, again, I didn't have, you know, any of these connections at that time, but I told the pastor, I told my wife, everybody that was close, I said, hey, I'm going to figure all of this stuff out and I'm going to manifest these things and make these things happen. And then I went to work, right? I started, you know, doing interviews, doing research. I actually was able to do an interview with a gentleman in Ghana that turned into a relationship. Just from that interview, we were able to sponsor his village in Ghana with school supplies. Had no idea that I was going to do that from the beginning, but because I had faith in the process, faith in the Most High and the universe, however you want to go about it, that is what carries me. That's what carries me through the dark periods of entrepreneurship, right? It's, you know, finances are up, down, especially in the beginning. Then we just had the pandemic, which changed everything. I don't get worked up about the outcomes. I know the outcomes that I want, but I stay flexible. I know they don't. Things don't always fall in line the way that I would like them to. Usually they don't fall in line in the easiest way. But I just have the faith that, you know, as long as I'm on the right path, I'm doing what I'm passionate about, and I'm doing it for the right reasons, right? Then that confidence will shine through me and allow me to overcome whatever challenges I have. So it's just faith over fear.
I think that one of my favorite painters, as well as lots of people's, Bob Ross, had a saying about not knowing what's going to happen and then things happening unexpected. He called them happy accidents. Mm-hmm. And I just think that none of us know how many windows or doors may be opened with the next step. And right. there's no need to catastrophize the next step because you don't know what the next step's going to bring. It could bring one of these happy accidents like you just talked about. You didn't know that you're going to have that opportunity, but you did. Right. And on the spiritual component, I remember one of my favorite quotes is, we're more, you know, we're more than this. We're more than this flesh. We're, what was the quote? We're not physical beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a physical experience.
Yes.
We are spiritual beings first and foremost. It's just currently we're having a physical experience. So we're really spiritual beings. Well, that's some great stuff.
With like talking about with like students and kids who are in high school and college, those are kind of, you know, influential years. What advice might you have for them in respect to like success and just kind of getting that motivation?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've had the privilege to do a lot of in-class mentor work here. Of course, more so prior to the pandemic, where I was in the classroom with the middle schoolers and the high schoolers as well. And that's in, you know, a lot of them come from the underserved, underprivileged communities. And, you know, a lot of it was just support, right? And they had a lack of a support system. So the students, as I got to talk with the students that were doing well had some type of guardian at home that was encouraging them, checking their homework, positively reinforcing what they were doing at school. The parents who didn't show up and didn't come to the meetings and had no interaction, those were the kids that usually struggled. And so what I say is just understand, and that's why I share my story of coming where I come from. And so it just takes a lot of motivation. Going back to the ACEs, ACEs comes down to, you know, two types of people, vulnerable people and then resilient people. And based off of if you're more of a vulnerable person or a resilient person, that's, you know, kind of how you will interact with your challenges. And so I just try to promote the importance of education through each level. You know, if I'm talking with middle schoolers, I talk about the importance of the things you're going to learn in high school. One of the things that I was able to show them physically was we did a career day one day with the eighth grade class. And so, you know, everybody went around and picked their jobs out of a hat. So it was random, right? So some people, you know, as eighth graders, some people got good salaries, and then some had a realistic moment where they were working as a cashier and they weren't making enough, and they ran out of money before they could pay all of their bills on paper. And so it is the more that I and we in the programs I engage with are able to bring the reality of what lack of education looks like to the youth, you know, whether it be in middle school, high school, and also being able to provide that support system, whether even if they may not have it at home as with family, if you can find a club, again, you can go to a ministry, whatever it is, just encouraging having a support system, having someone that they can talk to. Again, when I'm in the classroom, I was that person, but it's just all about education. So if we can get the students to buy into being lifelong learners before they graduate high school, right, it makes it that much better for them, you know, as they progress into adulthood and they don't shy away from education.
Welcome to Social Media Smackdown. Tonight, the irresistible force meets the illogical object. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to reason!
This week's Social Media Smackdown debate is from a popular coaching assessment blurb, and I shall read it. As children, we also need to survive emotionally. The human brain is wired to pay close attention to our environment in our early years and adjust accordingly so we can bear any emotional strains we encounter, make it to adulthood. Listen up, guys. There are no emotions that are bad for you. It is time that we stop demonizing emotions. It's important what you decide to think about emotions, but there is no emotion that can prevent your survival. Think about it. There are guns and bullets and bombs and falling meteors and crashing airplanes that can prevent your survival, but not your emotions. It's time to embrace our emotions, radically accept our emotions as part of the human experience, because the more you catastrophize them, the more difficult they'll become. Better yet, to see them as normal parts of the human experience and be fully human yourself, just like the rest of us. The more you know, the healthier you are. Join us next time.
What a slobber knocker! The winner by psychological smackdown, Doug Heath! No pronouns were harmed during the production of this podcast.
You're listening to Therapy Bites Art Lab, bite-sized therapy for your brain with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball Team. The best advice on the net. No copay required.
Welcome to the Therapy Bites Art Lab Library, where we have pored over thousands of volumes to bring you the latest Couch Crumbs quote. Oh, would you like a napkin? You're getting crumbs in the book.
That okay, me eat book.
Oh. And now today's Couch Crumbs quote.
Today's quote comes from B.F. Skinner, and it says, "We shouldn't teach great books, we should teach a love of reading. Knowing the contents of a few works of literature is a trivial achievement. Being inclined to go on reading is a great achievement."
Oh, you got crumbs on the couch. Extra points for you.
Here's Heath and the T-Ball Team.
Jackie, you mentioned the difference between resilient people and vulnerable people. For you yourself, have you been both? I mean, were you always just this resilient guy? Or did you yourself have to struggle through some sabotaging thinking that made you more vulnerable to things?
Yeah, so I think just really earlier on in my adulthood has been resiliency, and I would probably say I was vulnerable probably until about, you know, 10, 11, 12 or so, and then that's kind of when my resiliency began to kick in as I really began to adapt to the environment and understand, and I was able to understand what was going on, what I was going to be up against in order to get to, you know, this point where I am now, which I had no idea about back then. But overall, I would say it's been more resilient. I, you know, in my community, I know a lot of people who were vulnerable, and I watched the way that things kind of played out for them with that vulnerability, even now in adulthood, as we progress through life. So I would say I've been more resilient. And I think for me, it was just my immediate family, you know, my mom, my dad, and grandparents, they were always pouring into me. And just going back to some of those things with the middle schoolers and the high schoolers, my mom was always, and dad were always checking on me, you know, when it with homework or grandparents. Everybody always cared about what I was doing. And so that was a big plus for me.
What we teach in the art lab that we first engineer our thinking, and then our thinking engineers our life. Can you recall what was your shift in thinking? I mean, what was it that shifted in your mindset that led you from vulnerability to resilience?
Yeah, just overcoming fear. As I learned later on, fear is false evidence appearing real. So at my vulnerable stage, it was always being nervous about, well, what's next? Well, what's going to happen in school? Well, what's going to happen with this? What's going to happen with that? And then eventually I just had a click. I said, you know what? I'm going to take charge, and I'm going to start doing things, you know, a little bit differently, and I'm going to do them in consequence. I mean, I'm going to do them regardless of what I think the consequences may be, and I'm going to take chances. I'm going to you know, try to go out for this club. I wound up joining in high school. I joined the audio visual club, so I was able to produce television shows and really harness, you know, some of the things, you know, that I do now. But for me, it was, again, it was just understanding, looking around, looking at the environment, engaging with my peers, and understanding that if I'm going to make it through this, I can't continue to be vulnerable and shy and nervous and wait on things to happen. I have to come out and be a change maker.
Did some of those thoughts include thinking that you didn't have what it took, that it doesn't matter, that you're going to fail anyway? I mean, did you have some of those sabotaging thoughts?
I would say lightly, you know, early on, not too much. I was never really into self-deprecation, never really put myself down. It was just more so doubt about, you know, the outcome of the fruits of my labor at that time. Because, you know, again, as I looked around, there was not a lot of fruit laying around. It was more desert in just my environment. And so then I think one of the biggest hurdles I had to overcome was the thinking of not necessarily me, but everybody else. For instance, when I was seven, my grandmother and grandfather took me to Los Angeles from the Midwest. So all I knew was snow and cold. And then we came to Los Angeles to visit family. And I learned about swimming pools, and these people don't deal with snow and all these other things. And so I asked my mom, I said, well, why are we here in the cold and the rest of the family is San Diego and L.A.? And she's like, well, you know, at that time, she's like, that's just how it is. And even then, I'm like, oh, no. That's not just how it is. I need to get to the West Coast and get out of all of this stuff. So again, that's just been my mindset. It's like, all right, just because no one else has been able to do it doesn't mean that I can't do it. So I'll just have to be the person on the island and take the trip so that I can show everybody else.
Somebody has to be first. Somebody has to be somebody the first to step first. Foot on the moon. Somebody has to be first to say, hey, we can create this little device that you can do text and phone calls called the iPhone. And in your life, I guess you decided to be first. You just decided to go for it.
Yes. That's what it was all about. So I, you know, went through, got more education. I have my master and bachelor's degree in organizational leadership. I have associate's degree in audio production technology certifications, National Speakers Association. So everything I do is not for me to come here and name all this stuff off. But that's the only way people get to know that this can be done is when I come and talk about it.
That's right.
In forums like this, right? And so that's what it's for. So I just look at it as, hey, I'm the whoever you want to put, the Christopher Columbus, whatever journeyman you want to put
that's
there.
Right.
I have to go out, right? And it's not fun. It's lonely sometimes because you're doing things in a completely different direction than what other people understand at the time. But when the breakthrough happens, you know, further on, then that's when I get my reward, when I see other people using the things that I've been able to overcome for them.
You know, I think, Jack, that you're a beacon of what is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
mm-hmm.
that's one of the biggest things we all can be, is we can be a beacon of what is possible. I've heard Sir Anthony Hopkins, everybody's famous or favorite Hannibal Lecter, serial killer. He does a great thing on social media. He says, believe, 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 believe. And I think that's what's lacking in a lot of young people today, and it was lacking in me, is it's not that I didn't have the skills. It's not that I didn't have the potential. I simply didn't know what was possible. I mean, what was put in front of me as possible young was, you know, just, I mean, no disrespect to anybody, but a blue collar laborer. My dad was a blue collar laborer, and I thought that was my, you know, I was just supposed to kind of follow in his footsteps. And that's a very honorable job. He was a carpenter, and that's a great thing. There's another famous guy. His dad was a carpenter, and that worked out pretty well, you know. But that's an honorable profession. But I think that people like you can serve as a beacon of what is possible. But there's a hitch here that I think some of our listeners are going to pick up on because they're going to hear you say, well, I had this very supportive family. Is that true? You had a very supportive family?
I did, yes.
And see, that's the hitch. We're going to have some listeners say, but I don't. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, I don't have that supportive mother. I have an abusive mother. Or I don't have that supportive dad. I have a dad who is struggles with alcoholism and he's abusive. And they're going to use that, I think, as permission to not succeed. What might you tell that listener that's thinking that today?
Absolutely. And that's where, you know, the ACEs comes into play, right? So instead of me working to convince you, we'll lay out the research for you, let you take the ACEs quiz, and then you can see, that individual can see, well, this is this level of trauma that was caused by this. Going back to the support system, everybody has support systems in different ways. It's just, you know, kind of figuring out what type of support you need at that time. So like, now, you know, 20 plus years later, you know, family support is important, but I have a different support system at this time, right? I still can go to friends and family, but I have other individuals. So, and I would also say, circling back around to the vulnerable versus resilience, right? In this case, some of those people may have been from a more vulnerable or coming from a more vulnerable place, saying that, you know, because I don't have these things, you know, this and that. So that's one way, and one way people that are going to interpret, you know, the kind of this interview, the resilient people are going to take those things, and instead of saying, hey, and pointing the finger at what they don't have, is figuring out how to either get those things or figuring out a workaround. And that's just my overall message. So although I may have had this one thing, there was a bunch of other things that I did not have resource-wise. And so instead of picking up and saying, these are the things that I don't have, right, I look at it and say, all right, I do have these things. I need these things, so let me figure out the bridge on how to get there. So that's what I would just say to the individual. If you're going to just turn this on yourself and talk about what you don't have, well, then that's one of the first introspective things that you may want to consider as we move forward, or as you move forward and try to figure out, you know, a way through your hurdles and challenges. So don't go the negative route, right? Just figure out, this is what I have. This is where I'm attempting to get to. Can I get here by myself? Do I need to go out and find, you may not have, like you say, family, but there are other organizations and nonprofits and other places that would love to be your family. I deal with them every day. Hey, you can call us at Royalty Ministries. We will be your family and support system to help you get to where you need to be.
And the ACEs that you talked about, is that a link or something that people can go to and take an assessment? How's that accessed?
Yeah, so we actually offer a class, but just in general, if you just Google ACEs, ACEs class, I mean, there's a lot of different classes that are offered through various organizations. It just depends on the organization that the person wants to go through. But yeah, if you just do a Google of ACEs or adverse childhood experiences, there's a lot of data on the internet for that. Of course, you can always reach out to me, info@rmaz.org, and I can guide you there and share some resources that way.
And for our listeners, we'll be putting that in the show notes. You can access that there. And Jack, if you have a link to ACEs, we can also put that in the show notes. And we've got a little bit more time left today, 7 or 8 minutes, and we'll wrap up. And I'd love to hear my colleagues' questions here, but it sounds like we're talking about, well, how I would put it is everything is figure outable. Just imagine you want to take a journey. You have a destination. If you don't pick a destination, then you're guaranteed not to make it there. But the question is, what toolkit do you need to assemble on this journey? And that's what Jack's talking about, is get about the business of assembling your toolkit. Now, from our perspective, one of the most valuable tools in that toolkit is your thinking, and making sure that your thinking is accurate, realistic thoughts, accurate, realistic thoughts and life-affirming beliefs. And so first, you know, we recommend people look within into the very quality of their thoughts. Quantity of thoughts. We all have lots and lots of quantity of thoughts, but let's boil it down and look at what are the quality of those thoughts. How do you know those thoughts are accurate, realistic, and healthy for you? But as we close out, what other tips might you have, Jack, or whatever questions might you guys have for Jack?
Well, I've seen, you know, you've been kind of all over the world and done so many things, but I found it really interesting that it said that you had actually served in tribal government before.
Yes. So prior to COVID, I want to say, is when we started. So I was doing some business consulting here in Phoenix with one of my partners, and we met a gentleman who was a part of the Mississippi Choctaw band of Indians and was looking to start a new tribal chapter here in Arizona. And as we talk about overcoming challenges, I had never done any work with Native government whatsoever prior to this. But with my can-do attitude, I said, yes, come on, let's sit down, let's assess this, and let's figure out how to do it. And so what it winded up turning into was a huge history lesson for me, again, going into lifelong learning. There was no way I could have participated in this project at all without, you know, wanting to be a lifelong learner. What that took for me was a lot of reading. I learned a lot about United States law. I learned a lot about how United States law affects tribal law and how those two things work together. I learned that, you know, natives trying to, so what I had to do, the chieftain of this specific tribe brought me on as deputy chieftain to help build out and you know, bring in new resources and partnerships. And so through all of that, I was able to research my history and ancestry and tie myself back to the, here locally in the States, to the Choctaw Nation. And so went through the application process there to get enrolled in the Choctaw Nation there, here in the United States in Oklahoma. And then I was also able to trace my lineage back to Sierra Leone in Africa. And so I'm actually going there later this year to pick up my other citizenship. So I have dual citizenship. But overall, working here with the natives, I learned a lot about the different resources and actually a lot of the challenges that our natives do face here. You know, a lot of us just see casinos and everyone thinks that the natives are doing well because they have the casinos. Monetarily, you know, some of the tribes are, and there's only a handful of the, I don't want to say handful, there's a small minority of tribes that actually have the casinos. Those are usually the bigger federally recognized tribes, which there's only about 500 of those throughout the country. But then there's also a lot of smaller, some state recognized tribes and some just independent tribes that just still move on their own reservation but are not recognized by a state or the federal government. A lot of times on those reservations, mental health is something that is very critical. A lot of the natives struggle with substance abuse and a variety of other issues. But yes, that was a I would say a life-changing experience for me, being able to be a part of that.
I have a follow-up question there, Jack, here as we're kind of winding down. I've been wanting to ask this all throughout the episode.
Yes.
What would you say about the value you found in knowing your heritage? I mean, what part does that play in how you decide who you are as a person?
Absolutely. I mean, it changes the game once, and that's something else that we encourage is, as we talk about knowing yourself, is knowing what makes you. How did you get to this point? You're just a continuation of a lineage that started, you know, way before you did, right? And if you look back on your lineage tree, and you see the people who had to get together just for you to be here, you would be amazed. Going back to manifestation, as I talked about, if you would have told those people that they were going to have a great nephew or grandson or whoever I am to them that was going to do all of these things, they would, I doubt it. All based off of some of the things that they did and the groundwork that they were able to do. As I was able to trace back and go through my lineage, and that's both, I went both routes. I went through DNA, but I also go through paperwork. Right. And that's, you know, death certificates, birth certificates, all of the different legal documents, land documents, all of these things to trace back to, you know, who my ancestors were. And through that journey, you kind of get acquainted with your ancestors indirectly. You know, as I dive more into the research, it felt like I was getting more help to jump over those, get through those challenges from the ancestors. And so I just learned a lot. I said, oh, This is why, you know, my Mende people in Sierra Leone, they were travelers, right? They would come and set up shop in one area in the village, and they wouldn't stay. Once everything was up, they would go and continue to move around. So I said, oh, well, that's, you know, that's part of what's in me. I learned about what my grandparents did and what my great aunts did and land and all these other different things. And so once you know those things are in your DNA, it helps to activate your personal superpowers. And so that's just kind of the way I approach it. And I always tell people, for those of you who've seen who know the Superman story, right? When Superman was young and a boy, he had all of these powers, but he felt like he was an outcast because he had lasers in his eyes and he was super strong and all these things. But once he learned where he came from and who his father was, right, and that they came from Krypton and all of these things, and he got all this stuff together, life changed for Superman and he became who he was. You can do that same thing in your life.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. What great words of wisdom. I really appreciate that. And I've always kind of looked at it. There's an ancient scripture that says we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. And I think that we can look at our heritage as those witnesses. And you are the pinnacle of all that has become before. All that's left for each of us is to decide how we're going to carry that out and how we're going to honor that heritage by our life as the capstone of that heritage, by being the very, very best of all that have come before you and all that have come before me. Jack, thank you so much for being here today. Any parting words of wisdom before we cut to the end of the episode here today?
There's no challenge that you will ever come across that you cannot overcome with faith. Physically, it may look like, that the odds are very slim of you accomplishing whatever it is that it is that you want to do. But if you take the time and the patience and you learn about whatever it is you're trying to do and continue to educate yourself and engage yourself in that specific industry or, again, whatever that goal may be, you can overcome and you can be whoever you want to be.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Guys, everything is figure outable. Mm-hmm. Everything is figure outable. Thanks for joining us. Share it out to your friends. We wish you all the very best in your own personal psychology of engineering success. Join us next time.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hey, T-Ballers. Thanks so much for being with us today. If we brought value to your day, show us some love by leaving your positive feedback and inviting some friends to listen in and join the T-Ball team. Next time on Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, T-Ballers, welcome to today's episode. We are privileged to have Lewis Shulman, a digital expert, a technology expert. He is actually stepping out of the matrix to come to us today to tell us how to stay sane in the digital age. That's right. We're going to talk up next, decatastrophizing digital. Join us for the episode.
Government legal gobbledygook. Therapy Bites is not intended as a diagnostic or as an alternative to professional clinical treatment. Resources and advice are for information and entertainment purposes only. Brought to you by someone saying things you don't like? Tape that nagging loudmouth shut. Government-approved speech tape. Gas tape. Now available at your local hardware store. Therapy Bites Art Lab is not an approved, not, endorsed, not, authorized, butt-kissing affiliate of the United States Special Offense Assessment Police. SOAP for short. Warning. Consumption of Therapy Bites Art Lab content by Kool-Aid drinking, stinking, thinking, social media, pseudo-psychological pushing, wacky woke, anti-free speech, mumbo-jumbo advocates may cause spontaneous internal skull combustion, stomach discomfort, and or laxative effects. Allergy warning. Therapy Bites is manufactured in a facility that challenges nutty distortions, processes nuggets of accurate, realistic thinking, and life-affirming beliefs. This is the audio version of the legal fine print. Why are you still listening to this when you can catch the next great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab with a good friend or family member? Really? Are you still there? This is getting silly. Move on to the next psychologically thrilling episode of the best advice on the net. No copay required.
Me eat copay.
Yeah, with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball team. Go ahead, don't be podgoraphobic. Scoot, scoot, scoot. On to the next episode.